Sports KRFP Community Radio.
KRFP Moscow is the best in the USA.
Yeah.
And you're listening to KRFP Moscow. A little bit of the weather. This is the Wild Clearwater Country Show, by the way. We're going to have a nice guest here just shortly. Looks like it's about 91 degrees tonight. It's expected to get down to 52. Highs projected for today would be about 93. Don't know if it's going to make it. It still might do that. Tomorrow, high about 93 projected, low of 55. Friday, high of 89, low of 53. Saturday, high 82 and low of 51. And Sunday, high of 81. And I guess mostly clear and sunny skies. So that is the weather. Play a quick little song here before we get into the Wild Clearwater Country Show and our guest. This is a song by Tom Peterson here, and I have a CD that he did. He's appeared on the show live before. So here's a little tune by Tom Peterson.
Thank you.
And you are listening to KRFP Moscow. We have a great show here on the Wild Clearwater Country Show today. We have a guest with us, Lynn Lahey. Lives up in the Clearwater Valley near the, I guess one would call it the upper end, above Kuski. Lynn, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Gary.
I'm going to pod you up as much as I can. Let's see how that comes through.
Okay, do you just tell me what, you know, the volume's okay?
Yeah, the volume's pretty good right there. I think that should, you know, that should come in pretty well for us here. Wow, what an amazing piece of work. I think we'll give a brief introduction. Lynn, you're sort of a kind of our Renaissance man here in North Central Idaho, and you have come up by doing some research with the five most blatant myths about freight transportation on the Lower Snake River. And of course, this is very germane for a couple reasons right now. And I'm with that brief introduction, and you can even go into the couple reasons that's very germane. But I would love you to just start in on these five very interesting myths, this paper that you have produced that I think calls attention to sort of what's happening here.
Well, of course, the you know, the megalod battles that we've been waging together, I might add.
That is true.
Friends of the Clearwater and lots of great folks in Moscow and here in the Upper Clearwater Valley and, of course, all over the nation. That really got me interested in the port of Lewiston, and so I started really trying to understand what that was all about. I grew up in Lewiston. I remember back in 1958, in fact, a good friend and neighbor was the first port director, and this was when I was still in high school, and I've kind of followed the port over the years a little bit, but nothing like, you know, my interest that developed with the their attempt to convert Highway 12 into a megalod industrialized truck route. The port was a major player in that attempt. And so I started looking at the port and the actual data and what it was costing us and so forth, and that led to the piece last January about, you know, how much we were subsidizing every barge that left the Port of Lewiston just for the proposed dredging, just the dredging alone. About $18,000 a barge, and so then that led.
Wow!
I have a curious mind, I guess.
You must, but that's a very good thing in a democracy. In fact, a democracy cannot function without people with curious minds.
So anyway, that led me to start looking at the whole Lower Snake, and again, just on freight transport, and, you know, not looking really initially at the dams and the salmon and all those other complicated issues, but just focusing on freight transport. And so what I learned, and I just kept at it, I mean, I kept, you know, I learned to, you know, look for the right sources and to, you know, the Army Corps is a wonderful source of information, probably some of which they wish that wasn't quite so public. But in any case, it became clear to me as I started putting together this information on what is happening now and what has happened with the Army, you know, with the freight transport, waterborne commerce is the term used. And, you know, the only conclusion I could reach was that the public was getting hosed.
Well, that comes through loud and clear in your report. Yeah,
yeah,
wow.
I mean, I ended up saying, you know, that I think something about, you know, that what was really going on, that they were perpetuating myths. And that in the Northwest here, we have a phrase, or a couple of phrases for that. We call it cooking the books or blowing smoke. And the unfortunate thing about all of this is that the taxpayers are, of course, the ones that are footing the bill.
That means you and I and everyone that's listening.
That's right. And not only are we paying a lot of money that is, it's, you know, really a poor investment of public funds, a very poor investment, but it's also, these myths are also keeping people in the region, in our communities, from having a really needed dialogue about transportation, you know, freight transport in and into and out of the inland Northwest, and so that's a serious loss, and it's also keeping us from investing in, you know, making wiser investments, I guess I'd say, from investing in the areas that we ought to be investing in, because right now, as I like to mention in terms of dredging, you know, we're in a hole, and the only solution that the Army Corps is posing, and we just got to keep digging.
That seems to be a rather silly way to get out of a hole. But, yeah, wow. So, could you tell us sort of what, you know, describe these five myths here and, you know, each of them, and maybe talk a little bit about each of the five myths, because of course, has been distributed widely. I've seen some media accounts about this, but it's very, very informative, and I encourage all the listeners to get a copy. That's why people like Lynn prepare these things, so people can read them.
Well, the first myth I looked at, Gary, was this myth that barging is the most fuel-efficient means of transporting cargo. You know, you hear that all the time. I mean, whether it's Governor Otter or whether it's the Port of Lewiston, you know, director, or, you know, it's constantly saying, well, yes, but it's the most fuel-efficient means of transporting cargo. And it turns out that that's a myth.
Wow.
That's a myth. And this is kind of, you know, how this stuff comes about. There's this chart that I include that is kind of, you see it all over the propaganda sites, and it shows that barging carries more tons of cargo per gallon of fuel used than does rail and does truck. And there's several problems. First of all, that chart is outdated. Even the research company that did the study has updated that information, and it's changed the situation. You know, it's not nearly as much spread as they like to claim. Secondly, the study itself has been shown to have been flawed, and a third item is really important is for us to understand around here is there's no such thing as barge freight and rail freight. It's all truck barge and truck rail. And so when you look at the research, look at the data, it turns out that it costs more in terms of energy now, not talking dollars, in terms of energy. It takes more energy to ship grain by barge than it does by rail.
That's amazing. And I guess there are probably reasons for that, I would assume.
Well, there are a number of, you know, reasons behind that. And first of all, for example, I discovered that over the last 12 years, trucking has become 11% more fuel efficient. Okay. And barging has become 23% more fuel efficient. But rail has become 55% more fuel efficient. So, you know, when we look at that, I mean, there's been significant improvements in rail transport from a fuel efficiency standpoint. And then the other thing is the rail now is getting closer to the farms. The reason I'm talking about agriculture is because, you know, over 95% of what gets shipped out of Port of Lewiston is agriculture. And over 70% of what goes through the port of, or down the Snake River, rather, is agriculture. In fact, last year, 2011, the statistics are usually about a year behind.
Mm-hmm.
2011, 90% of what went down the river was agriculture. So, you know, so it's pretty safe to focus on you know, agriculture, grain, essentially wheat. And so what's been happening lately is that improving. Bigger cars, unit trains. These are 110 car units that just travel from one point to another. I mean, it's, you know, one run, so to speak. They've been, you know, the unit loader at Ritzville drew a bunch of grain shipping away from barge. The unit loader that's going to come on this fall at McCoy, north of Moscow, about 40 miles, is going to take a bunch of wheat off the Palouse and put it on the rail. So you know, that when you look at the combination of trucking to rail versus trucking to barge, for much of the area, it's cheaper to truck to rail. And then the rail and barge are fairly competitive. So that's you know, that played a big role in really understanding what's happening here. But of course, the, you know, the propagandists would like us to continue to believe that barging is more fuel efficient.
Yeah, what I thought was very interesting, if I understand the chart they put in there, am I correct in assuming that the chart that some of the propagandists use, the you know, the port districts and whatnot, that chart is based upon information that is across the country and doesn't apply specifically, I guess, to this region?
Well, that's another factor. I mean, there, you know, I mean, when you and I are visiting about this, of course, as you know, this report is, you know, it's fairly dense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and or rich, I guess one could say, but that's another variable that chart was. They used averages, national averages, and you know, the Columbia Snake system represents only 5% of the national waterborne commerce, and the Snake is only 5% of what happens on the Columbia. So, you know, in other words, using national averages really does not very accurately present the picture here in the Northwest. One of the things is number of barges on the Mississippi. They'll have tows, that is, they'll hook a bunch of barges together. They'll have tows up to 60 and 80 barges.
That's a significant number.
Yeah, 15 is really common. I mean, that's just common. Well, on the Snake, it's 1 to 4. In fact, the Army Corps at one point here a few years ago said 3.4 was the average. It's probably less than that now. And so you know, it's much more, you know, fuel efficient on the Mississippi than it is here. And so when the regional researchers like Ken Casavan at WSU, who's, you know, really a, you know, highly respected professional expert in this area, when he studied this using regional coefficients, he found that regional fuel efficiency coefficients, basically. He found that rail is, for transporting grain in eastern Washington, rail was definitely more fuel efficient.
Very, very interesting. That sort of segues, leads us into the second myth you talk about keeping trucks off the highways. Is that how you put it?
Well, yes. There, you know, I looked at these standard, mm-hmm, kinds of, you know, statements, mm-hmm, that people keep making. I mean, the barging supporters keep making it, and that's when I started looking at it. Well, where did they get that number? Is that true? You know, I mean, and it was a little like, you know, when I was doing the stuff on sediment, I was so stunned by what I was coming up with my, you know, basically, you know, just using eighth grade math skills. I mean, I have a few more skills above that level, but I mean, that's all it took. I thought, no, this can't be right. I mean, I'm off a decimal point or something. I mean, this is the same thing with, you know, when all these trucks off the highway. I mean, I used, for example, of the Northwest River Partners. It's a, you know, basically a support group for the Lower Snake status quo, and they make this claim. I mean, I've seen it, several newspapers that, you know, that barging takes on the lower, or barging on the system takes 700,000 trucks off the river. I mean, you know, off the highway. 700,000 trucks. And I thought, gosh, that's a lot of trucks. Where do they get that figure? And so, you know, and I you know, again, just did a little math, and 700,000 trucks would haul, it turns out, 18.2 million tons of cargo. And you know, in 2011, as I recall it was, the total tonnage that went through the Bonneville locks was 6.34 million tons. And so all of that for that year could have been hauled by 243,000 trucks, which is just 35% of what Northwest River Partners claims.
Well, that's an interesting...
But that assumes that everything that wasn't hauled by barge would be hauled by truck, mm-hmm. not rail. And in grain, for example, you know, the modeling that Cassavant and some of his colleagues did showed that if when barging wasn't available, like during the drawdown, 94% of grain got shipped by rail, not by truck. So I said, so what if only half of that freight got shipped by truck? Well, realistically, it'd probably be, you know, less than 15% that got shipped by truck. But we'll say half. What if half got shipped by truck? Then the number of trucks that would be required that actually would be taken off the highway turns out to be 121,000, not 700,000. Or, you know, just 17% of what Northwest River Partners continually claims to be the case. And so that's the kind of, you know, fairly simple analysis, really, that I use to try to look at this kind of stuff. And you know, they make these claims all the time. Port of Lewiston said their dock extension was going to take 14,026 trucks per year from the highway, off the highway by 2020. And the reality is, it probably won't take any trucks off the highway. Not any at all.
That's right. And in fact, given the location, as you pointed out earlier, that with rail being more accessible, you know, you've got the one line, so to speak, which is the river, the Snake River, but there may be more than one rail line in the region. Therefore, you may have, when you use the comparison between trucks and rail and trucks and barging, you may actually end up with fewer. It's possible fewer trucks, or at least fewer truck miles, if rail is more accessible.
Right, that's right. Well, that's exactly what's happening on the, you know, in your area on the Palouse. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I found really interesting that the you know, the port of Whitman, which you know includes the port of Wilma, I mean, which is you know like a you know like the port of Lewiston, but I mean they also have you know quite a few other business entities in the airport and so forth. Well, they have been working very diligently to improve the spur lines, the small like the you know P&L line that comes down actually to Moscow. And from you know the main BNSF line and UP line and up near Spokane, and they've been looking at Tiger grants and things to you know beef up the bridges for the heavier wheat cars, and it turns out that their you know research and this is you know Port of Whitman that they show that they're you know as the as the lines get improved and the McCoy unit loader comes online, for example, that it will take trucks off the highway. I mean, really, literally off the highway. And in fact, and it's going to be you know have a major impact not just on barge shipping but also on savings on the highways. That's why they're you know putting the money in there. The state of Washington is as well as trying to get federal money. And so, and what I found interesting also is that whole project is financially self-supporting. You know, the two major farm co-ops on largely on the Palouse are putting up $17 million for that rail transport Sukhoi unit loader. And then, you know, of course, Washington is putting money into rail to save highways. And so that, I just thought that was quite interesting. Apparently the farmers have figured out that, that barging isn't such a good deal after all.
Yeah, I guess they've certainly figured out if they're willing to spend $17 million of their own dollars. And, of course, I've been past that, the McCoy facility. I think a lot of people that travel between places like Moscow and Spokane will take that back road and will see that. Definitely see right where it is. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. In fact, rail used to be the backbone of transportation here in the Palouse, and in fact much of the country, and it seems like it's still going to become even more valuable here in the future.
Well, and one of the things that I think people need to be reminded of is that you know, we support trucking. It's generally thought that, you know, with the public you know, maintaining the highway system and so forth, that we probably subsidize the trucking industry about 20%.
That's significant.
Yeah, it is significant. I mean, they know, and others, they pay taxes and they pay, you know, permit fees and so forth, and you know, for highway maintenance, recognizing that they, you know, they you know, do damage to the highways. On the other hand, I mean, in Idaho, for example, the major legislative interim committee about 2 years ago that studied this, that was their estimate that, you know, the public, namely in terms of, you know, cars and pickups and so forth, they're paying probably about 20% more than their fair share, and you know, hence, you know, because trucking is paying under their fair share. But, you know, if we say about a 20% subsidy, and rail, there's almost none. I mean, there's a little bit maybe, but once in a while a special grant or something for improving a line or something. But barging, 90%.
90%?
90% of the costs of maintaining waterborne commerce in the United States is borne by the taxpayer.
That's, now that's more than significant. That is extraordinary.
Well, and what's interesting too is that, you know, when and both the Bush administration and the Obama administration tried to get you know, barge operators and companies and so forth to you know, pay a little more, either a little more fuel tax or to pay like a, you know, a fee for going through a lock or something, and they of course screamed bloody murder, and the main argument they made was that if we have to pay any more than we presently pay this minor fuel tax, that we won't be competitive anymore. So in other words, without a 90% subsidy from American taxpayers, we're not going to be able to compete with rail.
Wow.
And, you know, and when I say these things, I mean, it's, I mean, I'm not blowing smoke here. I mean,
no,
I mean,
this is...
I, you know, I footnote this stuff. I mean, the sources are there. A person can look it up.
That's what I find. This is a very dense report in that you have condensed it down into a very readable and fact-filled piece of work, which is just incredible. Well, the third myth, of course, barge, about barge being friendly to the environment, barge transport.
Yeah, the, you know, barge supporters love to talk about how friendly they are to the environment, and it, you know, this saves all kinds of pollution and so forth. And of course, they base this on the false assumption that anything that didn't get barged would be trucked.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, trucking is, you know, much less fuel efficient than rail or barge. And it still has its place, obviously, because, you know, it goes quickly, it goes anywhere and, you know, whatnot. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of trucking done. But you know, it does burn quite a bit more fuel than rail and barge. And so, and consequently, the more fuel burned, the more, you know, the more pollution you have. And so, you know, basically they argue that, again, the barging is the friendliest to the environment, or the least harmful. And, of course, we already talked about fuel efficiency, and they're, you know, making all these false claims about their fuel efficiency and for barging versus truck barging and truck rail. And so, as I mentioned, barge or truck rail is in our area more fuel efficient, burns less, uses less energy than does truck barging, and so consequently, of course, there's less pollution. And you know, one of the studies that has been done at WSU there with Cassavan again and some of his colleagues, these are sophisticated studies. I mean, this is the Freight Transport Institute at WSU, and they had GPSs on trucks and you know, and acreages by township and all kinds of data, and see where these units go and how many truck miles are, you know, traveled to get to barging, and how many truck miles to rail and so forth. And essentially they ended up concluding that that barging was, you know, actually led to more energy use and hence more pollution than did traveling, you know, truck rail.
Wow, well, that's, of course, that it would seem to follow that if it's not as efficient as they claim, that it may even be, then it would be more polluting.
Yes, there's a little difference in the kind of pollution that occurs, but the most blatant, you know, hoax in this area was done by the Port of Lewiston in their Tiger IV grant, and they cooked the books, I mean, in an unbelievable fashion. They cited for their fuel efficiency a chart that appeared in an Army Corps written by a member of the Army Corps that appeared in 2002, but the article was referring to the fuel efficiencies as from a study in 1981. So in 2012, the Port of Lewiston was using fuel data that from 1981, and it claimed that barging was 8.5 times greater than truck, and since by their calculation anything that wasn't barged would be traveled by truck, would be hauled by truck, which is of course incorrect as well, therefore there was this huge fuel savings and hence, you know, pollution savings by extending their dock and traveling by barge. And the reality is, of course, the dock is a container dock, which only represents a very small percent of even what gets shipped out of the Port of Lewiston. So that was kind of, you know, the extreme example I found of cooking the books.
Yeah, that chart, you put a chart in here that's just, you know, it's almost laughable when you look at it, that was being promoted by the Port of Lewiston and getting their money from the federal government. And as you point out, we pay for that.
Yes, we do. I mean, you know, it's the container dock is being extended as we speak, literally. And the existing dock there, which they said was in good repair, that was the term they had to use for the grant. So, I mean, the existing dock is in good repair. They claim on their website they can offload any size of load that can possibly be permitted on highways in the state of Idaho. That's their pitch for mega loads, and yet there's, you know, the taxpayers are spending, you know, approximately $3 million to extend that dock, and that dock today handles only 25% of the amount of container freight that it handled in the year 2000.
Amazing, 25% of what it was handling.
I mean, it's like, I mean, if I came to you and said, you know, as a private investor, and I said, Gary, I've got this project, and it's going to cost $3 million, and you know, but we really think it'd be a good project, and you said, oh well, you know, is there such a demand that you need more space, or you know, bigger dock? Well, no, and actually the demand is kind of down some. How much down?
Down.
Well, about 75%. But, you know,
I would think that probably wouldn't be a good investment of my money.
That's right, but, you know, that's private money versus public, I guess.
Well, that moves us, I guess, to, I guess, your fourth myth, which I think's about cost.
Well, that myth is always, you know, that they keep saying barging is the cheapest way to move freight. You know, that's, that's, you know, you hear that all the time. Barging is the cheapest way to move freight. I mean, you know, the people testify that at congressional committees. Our governor claims that, you know, that the only cheaper way to move freight than barging is to throw something. And he made that claim at Port of Lewiston here a while back when they got their grant for a dock extension. And so, you know, again, I thought, well, wait a minute. If barging, and again, truck barging is less fuel efficient, and if it's, you know, and you know, went through all this kind of thinking, and if the farmers, in fact, are investing in rail, what's the story here? And so, and again, it turns out that it's really not even the cheapest way to move freight, given a 90% subsidy.
Ooh.
In other words, we're you know, I mean, the public is paying 90% of the cost, and they still can't compete with rail. I mean, there's something kind of crazy about that.
Something's very wrong.
And based on 2002 to 2008 fuel taxes paid on the Columbia Snake system, and I want to emphasize to any listeners, I didn't cherry pick the data. I mean, you know, you can do that and float around. I used what was available. In this case, the fuel tax data was only, you know, currently was only available for 2000 to 2008, and then and sometimes it takes, you know, like say a year or two, or there's a lag. But anyway, using that data, it showed that on the Columbia Snake, the fuel tax charged for barges paid only 6% of the operation and maintenance of that waterway, and that's right out of the Congressional Research Service.
Mm-hmm.
6%. So you know, even when they're subsidized by, you know, hey, let's be generous. What if we said they're only subsidized 80%?
80%, yes.
Or how about 70%? You know, I mean, even then, they can't compete with rail anymore. So I mean, it's a screwed up system.
It really sounds that.
And one what's happening, and that some people aren't connecting the dots on yet, I don't think, is of course, and first of all, the costs are going up. I mean, huge costs for maintaining this system. You know, the tab for you know, dredging at the Clearwater Snake confluence this winter is probably going to be $7 to $8 million, and this is a perpetual project. I mean, every few years they got to do this. Just the dredging there is you know, probably going to cost. Well, to try to control sediment there, the Corps has admitted now to $55 million in costs, and mostly to keep Port of Lewiston open. So, but and then we have these, you know, we've spent $267 million on the Columbia Snake system maintenance in the last 8 years, $267 million, $188 million for dredging the lower Columbia so that Portland could stay viable with get bigger ships up there. The Army Corps just let a contract for $257 million to try to save the jetties off the mouth of the Columbia, and they say that's just the first step. That you know, it's going to cost over $500 million to fix those jetties. So I mean, these costs are just rising, and meanwhile, the amount of freight is down. So then, when you compare those two, the cost, the subsidy per ton, is just climbing rapidly, very rapidly.
Yes, what you've done in this report is you put it in the context, looking at the Snake system as compared to the rest of the Columbia, and given budget deficits, how much longer? I guess the question that some American citizens may ask is, how much longer can we afford to continue to subsidize this form of transport?
Well, the Army Corps has just an extensive, you know, system of dams and dikes and levees channel, river channels and so forth. I mean, it's just huge, and they are running out of money, and they just can't maintain that much of the system. They asked the National Academy of Sciences to study this problem, and the National Academy of Sciences told the Army Corps that unless you can get a lot more money out of Congress, you probably are going to have to consider abandoning some parts of your system. And I lived on the Columbia River, if I lived in Kennewick and Pasco and so forth, and I knew how much money was being spent on the Snake and what small amount of contribution it made to the whole system, and if I knew that when the Snake was closed for drawdown a few years ago, that 40% of the grain off in eastern Washington came to the Columbia for barging. And all these kinds of factors. I mean, if I were those folks, I'd say, we better, you know, start figuring out how we're going to support the Columbia, which has got a lot more freight than the Snake. And they might have to think about abandoning commercial navigation on the Snake.
That's a very, very real possibility, and one that your report brings out. This is just amazing. And the last myth is maybe it's one of the biggest ones that we hear around here.
Well,
and that,
you know, go ahead.
And that's being that barging here is a vital part of the economy.
Yeah, the point is made frequently. Oh, you know, our ports are so important. You know, the slogan of the Port of Lewis is it pays to have a port. And they really should have a sign out there that says it costs to have a port.
That's right.
And so, you know, I for one thing, I looked at the amount of freight that's gone down the Lower Snake in the last 11 years, and the container shipments out of the Port of Lewiston, for example, and you know, I have charts in there, or graphs of these, and it's just dropping like a stone. And so, I thought, well, wait a minute now. In the last dozen years, I mean, through the terrible recession and everything, our economy here has really been, I mean, it hasn't been stable. Certainly we dipped in 2008, you know, and 9 and 10. But overall, it's been, you know, compared to much of the country, been pretty good. And yet, you know, river transport is plunging downward. And so I thought, well, maybe they don't play a very significant role. And so then I looked at the things that were being shipped, the products that were being shipped out of Lewiston, and except for grain, I mean, not that, you know, certainly agriculture is very important to our region, but except for grain, I mean, paper shipments from Clearwater Paper, that major, you know, employer, the largest in the region probably, their paper shipments the last few years, according to the data on the Port of Lewiston site, I used all the, you know, years they had posted, paper shipments are down 81%. Containerized grain is down by 95%. Lumber, 100%. They don't, you know, all the mills, we have 5 or 6 mills that are all operating in the region and seem to be holding their own through the recession, and now, of course, with the building, you know, housing market picking back up, they're going to be doing pretty well. They ship everything by rail and truck. They don't ship. Port of Lewiston hasn't shipped a stick of lumber in 5 years. And so, you know, I thought, well, that's not very, you know, important to the economy. And then I looked at the overall workforce in Nez Perce County, and which is, you know, that's the port district, for example, Port of Lewiston. And they list the 12 largest employers each month, and I looked at that list, and there was only one employer on the list that ships anything by barge, and then that was Clearwater Paper, and I just mentioned, you know, they've dropped their shipments 81%. So yet they're, you know, very successful these days, and they're shipping by truck and rail. And so that was, you know, kind of puzzling to me. And we had a pretty good, unemployment rate during the Great Recession compared to the nation, and yet barging was plunging. I just kept looking at these kinds of things, and I thought, you know, there's really no evidence that barge transportation plays that important a role. We know that out of the 18,810 people employed in or currently in the labor force in Nez Perce County, we do know the port manages to employ, I think, 7 of them. But I didn't figure out the percent of what 7 is compared to 18,810. But
it's not very much, I wouldn't think.
and still, the port has to be subsidized. You know, they get mm-hmm. 450,000 taxes every year. They get over 100,000 in sales tax because they're a government entity, and, you know, part of state sales tax gets distributed to government entities. Their budget suggests they don't pay any property tax, so, you know, the county and the city are foregoing, I mean, they have 200 and some acres, so a prime, you know, waterfront property and commercial property. I don't know what the sales tax would be on, I mean, the property tax on that, but it'd be sizable. So they're probably being subsidized $700,000-$800,000 a year for 7 employees. That's kind of expensive.
It sounds like it. Those 7 employees could certainly take a, wow, that's significant.
Well, and I'm not suggesting that all goes to employees.
No. You know,
but, I mean, it's just that, you know, in other words, the port operation, 50 years ago, Lewiston residents were promised that the Port of Lewiston just needed mm-hmm. a little seed money. You know, maybe for a few years, maybe 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And 50 years later, you know, local citizens are still subsidizing that port to probably 600,000, 700,000 a year.
That is significant, and I wasn't suggesting either that they got all of that, the employees got all the money either. I just find it fascinating. Sometimes when one looks at these subsidies, it may even be cheaper for taxpayers to, let's say, pay some employees, for example, rather than to actually operate the port, just pay them a regular salary or a wage, and just, you know, but not have them operate the port, it seems like.
Well, and one point I'd want to make, Gary, before we wrap up, and that is that, you know, when I talk about the Port of Lewiston, I'm really only talking about the marine navigation part, you know, the shipping, because, I mean, they do other things than, you know, in terms of invest in property and, you know, sell it at a discount to SEL and, you know, whatever. I mean, and so, I mean, if taxpayers in, you know, Nez Perce County want to support that, I guess that's their choice. But to, you know, have all of Americans subsidize every barge that leaves that port by approximately $18,000, that just didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Certainly doesn't to me either. Well, Lynn, you had some interesting conclusions, I thought, but I wondered if you just wanted to run through some of those and let the listeners know some of the conclusions from the report that you've done.
Well, I guess, you know, the real conclusion was that, you know, as a region, we need to recognize that barging, freight transport on the Lower Snake is not sustainable. It just isn't. And you know, that's a hard, you know, thing for some folks to believe. But if you look at the data, I just don't think it's sustainable. And so we really, you know, need to be considering how to make the wisest public investments we can into transportation. Another thing I think we need to understand is that the Army Corps now is really not considering climate change at all. And you know, I guess if you want to sit around and deny that, you know, that the climate is changing, have at it. But, you know, there are some huge changes going on, and it's going to lead to more fires, which leads to more sediment, which leads to more cost to maintaining the channel. It means warmer water, and that's going to create problems for salmon and steelhead. We're going to see significant problems probably by, in fact, in this August when we've drained Dorshak and we can't keep the temperature at Lower Granite low enough. The flood risk at Lewiston has been, Army Corps is trying to sweep that under the rug, frankly. There's some serious issues out there that suggest that we're just not going to be able to sustain barging on the Lower Snake. What I concluded anyway from looking at all this. Another thing that, you know, none of the things that are in this document talk at all about the really serious other costs of maintaining this system. You know, we have the fishing industry, commercial fishing, that's impacted. We have tourism that's impacted. We have the electricity ratepayers that are paying, you know, $600+ million a year, trying unsuccessfully to recover our fish stocks. Wildlife has suffered. You know, we flooded 22,000 acres of prime wildlife habitat with the Forest Snake River dams, and you can't replace a wetland by going up on a basalt bluff and planting a few bulrushes.
No, that is very true.
It just didn't work, and so, you know, there's been a huge loss to wildlife. The Native Americans, and particularly the Nez Perce, for example, have suffered huge economic and cultural and social costs related to maintaining the Lower Snake River project. And so those are things that go way beyond the economics of the situation, I think. And so as we, you know, if we see the system continue to decline, cost increase, federal budgets cut some more, which, you know, I think is bound to happen, has to happen, then it's a new ballgame on the Lower Snake. And I think the sooner people can really learn the truth about what's going on there, the better, and we can move forward to, you know, to maybe recover what we've lost.
Well, Lynn, that was a great summary. Do you want to let people know how they can obtain the report?
Yeah, they can donate a dollar to Friends of the Clearwater.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I mean, the report's popping up, put it that way. It's popping up on various websites, including Friends of the Clearwater.
That is right.
And so they can certainly go there. It's just starting to get out into the media and get, you know, some attention, I think. And so, I mean, I think we're going to see more, you know, along that line. It is a complicated piece, and, I mean, a person has to sit down and really read it carefully and whatnot. And so, it's not, you know, it doesn't have the sex appeal of a 30-minute spot. And I would assume that we'll start getting some pushback, that I will, and others get pushback from the industry. But what I find so interesting, Gary, is, you know, usually when they try to push back on some of this stuff, they say, oh, but we take 700,000 trucks off the highway.
Highway.
You know, barging is the most fuel-efficient means of moving freight and
right.
So forth. And so, you know, I'm not sure what the pushbacks go. They'll attack the messenger probably, but,
yes.
You know, I don't know. I'm real curious to see what arguments they use, because they can't very well use some of the ones they've been using.
No, they can't. Well, Lynn, I want to thank you for being on the Wild Clearwater Country Show and for your dedication in showing some of the myths about barging on the Lower Snake and some of the problems associated with that. And thank you very much, and wish you the best. And I hope you have a nice rest of the day up there on the Middle Fork of the Clearwater.
Well, we're headed tomorrow farther upstream to the Locksaw with our kids and grandkids and the couple of days of floating and rafting and a campfire and probably some good cold brown liquid.
Well, yes, always the good cold brown liquid.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yep, bye.
Bye. And you are listening. And you're listening to KRFP. It's the Wild Clearwater Country Show. We just had a great interview with Lynn Lahey. I'm going to put a little music on the air here and then come back and do the weather, and we'll go on to Between the Lines. Outro was some more music from Tom Peterson. You're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show here on KRFP Moscow. The weather looks like it's about 91 degrees. It didn't change much from earlier in the day. I think it got up to 92 while we were actually on the air. Low tonight projected to be 52 degrees. High tomorrow 93. Low 55. On Thursday night, Friday, high 90. Low 51. Saturday, high 84 and a low of 49 Saturday night. Sunday, a high of 84 and a low of 49 for Sunday night. Pretty much sunny, and that's the way it looks like for the rest of the week. You're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. Now we go to Between the Lines.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and...